Hello, and welcome to another edition of Problematic Women, a podcast and Facebook live show that showcases strong conservative women, current events, and the hypocrisy of the feminist left. My name is Kelsey Harkness. I'm a senior news producer with The Daily Signal.
And I'm Bree Payton, staff writer at The Federalist and friend of The Daily Signal.
Our first segment is called That Happened, where we highlight some of the more ridiculous and hypocritical news stories of the week, never shortage thereof. So this week, we're going to kick it off with Merriam-Webster, the dictionary, declaring feminism the word of the year for 2017. So the reason they declared feminism the word of the year is because they claim that it was a top lookup throughout the year. They said a lot of the spikes occurred around the Women's March and related marches that happened in other cities internationally and afterwards, where a lot of women in the media, I'd count both of us in that, were debating whether or not the march actually counted as feminism. People also apparently didn't quite know what feminism meant and what type of feminism the Women's March supported. So that's another reason the dictionary says that women and men were searching for the word feminism in 2017. And then there was another spike when Kellyanne Conway had that pretty incredible quote about saying she does not identify as a feminist because she thinks the word has been hijacked from a lot of really radical women. So I thought this was an interesting word of the year. Feminism certainly has been a big issue debated this year. Bree and I have both written quite a bit about this in the Daily Signal and the Federalist and other publications. It's such an interesting word because I've never fully decided if I want to embrace it and try to take its meaning back from these radical feminists who have hijacked it, or if I just want to reject it and do our own thing, sort of like Kellyanne Conway. How do you define yourself? Do you define yourself as a feminist?
Yeah, I often grapple with that also. Because, I mean, if you're looking at the dictionary definition of feminism, which is that, you know, men and women should be treated equally and have equal protections under the law, of course I consider myself a feminist. But, and I also find that annoying when people try, when you're debating someone, they turn to the dictionary and are like, oh, well, the dictionary says that this is how this is defined. Because words take on a different meaning in different contexts, right? And when we talk about feminism, oftentimes we are not talking about this simple definition, which is equality for both the sexes. We are talking about the Women's March. We are talking about women who say that you have to support abortion in order to be a feminist. And so I think just when we zoom out and look at the context of 2017, it is tough to say, yeah, I'm a feminist, just with all of the stuff that self-proclaimed and self-identified feminists are doing and saying about women and to themselves.
That's a really good point. So I do want to read the definition according to Merriam-Webster of feminism. I mean, it's the theory of the political, economic, and social equality of the sexes and organized activity on behalf of women's rights and interests. So again, I struggle with this because according to that definition, I am 110% a feminist. I support women's rights. I support equality of the sexes. I believe there's still a lot to fight for on the equality front internationally.
Of course.
Far more internationally than domestically here in the United States. But this word has just been so incredibly hijacked. And it really comes down to the definition of women's rights and interests. And I think that's where the roads divide and these types of questions come up.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And I mean, you know, in Saudi Arabia this year, women can now finally drive. Yay! So you are right that internationally, women face a lot more difficulty and challenges than we do here in the United States. And I think also just the concept and theory of intersectionality has really polluted feminism a lot in recent years. You know, this idea that everyone is weighted on their status of victimhood, and that, you know, if you're trans, then you win all the points and you're the ultimate victim.
So if you're, just for listeners who might not know what this is, if you're a woman, that is a point for you, but then you get 2 points if you're a woman and you're also African-American.
Right.
And if you're woman, African-American, and
trans,
lesbian, then
yeah,
that's 3 points, and
yeah,
it just goes on and on.
Right. So I think that that is a simplistic way of looking at people. And I mean, when you talk about privilege theory, I definitely think that there are advantages When your skin is a certain color in this country, I mean, that's just baked into the cake in our society and the way that our public education system is structured. And when individuals fight against school choice, I think that that disproportionately affects students of color. And I think when the way our society is structured does benefit people who are white, I think that you can say that as an objective fact. However, I think it's simplistic to put people in boxes and say, oh, you get X number of points because, you know, you look like this and you happen to fit within this gender. I think that that is a deeply flawed way of looking at and treating people.
So some other top words of the year, according to the dictionary, is the word complicit. And guess what? The word complicit in its explanation, it was published with a picture of Ivanka Trump. I believe we have the picture to show you. And this is what Merriam-Webster said about it. The word has been used in connection with the Trump administration throughout the year, first regarding whether members of the Trump administration were complicit in the firing of James Comey, and later whether they were complicit in the Russian disinformation campaigns meant to disrupt the 2016 election. Other politicians have used the word in an effort to distance themselves from the Trump administration. I thought it was so mean that they put the picture of Ivanka Trump on that. Of course, I believe it was an SNL skit that called her complicit. But it seems like even the dictionary is political.
I know.
How are we getting to the point where, you know, both sides have their own facts and we're going to need two different dictionaries too?
Yeah, I think we're already there. And I think Merriam-Webster's efforts to be woke, I think, are just really annoying. I just find all of this to be annoying.
Yeah, so another word was recuse, referring to Jeff Sessions. So that was very political. Another word of the year was empathy. And according to the dictionary, empathy was frequently used in articles criticizing Trump or Republicans for their lack of empathy in their comments or proposed legislation. That is a direct quote from the publishers, the authors of Merriam-Webster. The last one I want to mention is dotard, and this was referring to Trump's mental state. And so there was, I believe, a list of the top 10 words of the year, and so many of them were political and politically motivated. And now I think we're not just going to have a distrust with the press. We're going to have a distrust with the dictionary.
All of our institutions crumbling. One fell swoop. 2017 knocked them all out. News media gone. Dictionary gone. It's all gone. Like, forget about it.
Oh, we're at a new low.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of new lows, Chelsea Handler had a pretty bad week. This week, she came swinging at Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I'm just going to play the clip. This is just what she had to say. This is Chelsea Handler in her own words.
Please welcome that dumpster, smoky-eyed raccoon, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Oh, it's just back there getting a little smoky, yeah?
Yeah, I have noticed, actually, that you've looked more and more like whore-like in the last couple of months. It's like you came out, you were really plain in the beginning, and then all of a sudden all the eyeshadows started piling on, and then brighter lips and skirts. And the other day I saw some cleavage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a whore to know a whore, so.
Wow. So, as a makeup fiend myself, I personally think that Sarah Huckabee Sanders should double down on the smoky eye. Like, someone's coming at you, criticizing your makeup, double down.
You gotta
troll.
That's
what I've always done. Yeah, exactly. Gotta double down, gotta troll. So I hope that she continues to rock the smoky eye because it's fun, and I think she looks great. But also, I mean, you and I have talked about this, right? Chelsea Handler is someone who likes to identify or call herself a feminist. And according to her own definition, I don't really think that she lives up to that. We're going to also play the clip of Chelsea explaining what a feminist is.
I I want to say, I apparently didn't know this because I try not to read anything about myself. And I found out that apparently I'm getting a lot of backlash for making fun of Sarah Huckabee Sanders because I claim to be a feminist. I am a feminist who supports women who support other women and don't lie to the country and don't protect people. He said in that video that she has 3 children. She actually has 4 children, if you include Donald Trump, because that's a mother is the only person that could go out day after day after day and lie to the American people and not stick up. A feminist is somebody who sticks up for the people that are marginalized, whether that's the LGBT community, whether that's Muslims, whether that's Mexicans. Anybody who is marginalized in society is what I define a feminist to represent, somebody who goes and fights for them. That woman is not a feminist.
So... in other words, Chelsea Handler is saying that a feminist is someone who supports other women, but that doesn't count if your political opinions or your views do not align with hers, right? That's very clearly, just very blatantly what she is saying in this. She's saying, I don't like what you do every day in your role as White House Press Secretary because I don't like the person that you are working for. And so therefore, I don't have to treat you the way that I expect to be treated. I can treat you however I want, and the rules of feminism go out the window. That's what it sounds like to me.
What's particularly sad about this is Chelsea is not just attacking Sarah on the content, what she says on stage to the American people. She's attacking her based on her appearance.
Right.
And that is a particular low blow, especially coming from someone who calls himself a feminist. And this is, body shaming is something that we as women have been fighting against for years, and she kind of is doubling down on it and getting away with it. I have seen, you know, some random people respond to her on Twitter, but I haven't seen any major feminist voices coming out and decrying these personal attacks on Sarah Huckabee Sanders' looks. I sent out a tweet asking people to send me articles. Maybe I'm just not searching for the right thing. Send me articles of feminists saying it is not okay to attack another woman based on her looks. I got nothing. The only one that I found is from Jezebel, which has the headline, Chelsea Handler criticized for body shaming Sarah Huckabee Sanders. So the headline is the news of this story isn't that
she's
doing something wrong. They're
right.
Reporting on the fact that, oh, a few people are criticizing her. So they're not saying what they did is wrong. They're just pointing out that, oh, yeah, she did get criticized.
Right. The headline isn't watch Chelsea Handler body shame Sarah Huckabee Sanders. It's look at these tweets Chelsea got because people were upset that she did this thing. Yeah, I definitely agree that the backlash has been mild at best. I think Fox and Friends is really the only people that are, you know, doubling down on, you know, hyping up the backlash against her, and all of her other, you know, so-called feminist friends are totally ignoring it. And, you know, I'm going to say it again, and I say this every week, which is that this is another example of the fact that feminism is not about empowering women. It's about pushing a specific political agenda. And if you're a woman who doesn't support that specific political agenda or ideology or have that same mindset, oh, prepare to be thrown to the wolves, because that's what happens to women like us every single week, and women all around the country who maybe voted for President Trump.
And I think what people sometimes forget about Sarah Huckabee Sanders and the nature of her job is it is her job to defend the president of
right.
the United States, no matter what he does. So
yeah.
You can't necessarily say Sarah Huckabee Sanders personally, you know, we don't know her personal opinions on all of the issues that come up. She signed up to defend the president of the United States, just as all of Obama's White House press secretaries signed up to defend Obama. They didn't say, well, this is what Obama says, but I personally have a problem with it. For all we know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders sometimes might have a problem with some of the things that go on, but she is doing her job, and she has every right to do that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Kelsey, you had an interesting piece this week over at thefederalist.com talking about birth control and how it's it's linked to an increased risk of breast cancer. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, yet again, I'm on the birth control beat. last week, I believe I brought up a massive study that showed links between birth control and suicide rates, that if you're on hormonal birth control, you're three times as likely to commit suicide. I think that's extremely important figure to bring attention to, although the numbers are still small with the people committing suicide, of course. But women on birth control deserve to know that. And following that, an additional study by the same group of researchers, this time published in the New England Journal of Medicine, followed 1.8 million Danish women, which is a huge population size for a study, for an average of more than 10 years. Of those women, researchers identified over 11,000 cases of breast cancer. They estimated that for every 7,690 women who use hormonal contraception for 1 year, one extra woman might develop breast cancer, or approximately 13 additional breast cancer cases for every 100,000 women. So this risk is extremely, extremely small. The correlation between them, of course, we don't know for sure whether correlation is causation, but the topic of breast cancer being linked to hormonal birth control is really nothing new. What's new about this is, again, the massive size of the study, 1.8 million women. So my argument with this, there's two things going on here. One, women deserve to know what risks there are when they put these hormones into their bodies. Birth control, women have been taking birth control since 1960. How come it's 2017 and we're just finding out about these very serious risks? If you're listening to this and you're on hormonal birth control, I don't think this is a cause to go flush your birth control down the toilet, but it's maybe worth having a conversation with your doctor, particularly if you are at high risk for breast cancer.
Yeah, or just being more vigilant about routine screenings and about examining yourself, right? Knowing that, oh, I have a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of a potential increased risk because I am taking this hormonal contraceptive. Therefore, you know, every couple of weeks or every month after I get out of the shower, while I'm in the shower, just manually examining yourself for any abnormalities and having those double checked by a doctor.
And what's really strange to me about this study is the birth control linked to breast cancer. This study was covered by the New York Times, and birth control's link to suicide, which again was the study was conducted by this same group of researchers. That study has been completely ignored by the New York Times and a lot of the mainstream media. So first off, I don't understand why if they cover one study, they refuse to cover the other, when the fact is the suicide link is potentially more alarming and more important for women to know about, because it's a greater number of people committing. It's a greater chance, three times as likely if you're on hormonal birth control to commit suicide. But since the New York Times is covering the links to breast cancer, I wanted to read you all this letter to the editor, which this writer, Isabel DeCampo from Princeton, New Jersey, wrote to the New York Times. I want to read it because I think it's easy to conclude that when we bring up this subject, it's because, you know, people conclude that we're against Planned Parenthood, which, by the way, has been completely silent on all these studies. And they come to the conclusion that we're talking about these types of studies because of, you know, some religious beliefs that we might have on birth control. It's not true. For me personally, I'm interested in this topic because I don't think that, in my experience, when doctors pressure you to take birth control, I don't think they're informing you of the risks. So this was titled, "Many Modern Contraceptives Still Linked to Breast Cancer." "As a young woman who has taken oral contraceptives for several years, I'm frustrated by the new findings on the cancer risks associated with modern hormonal birth control. The risk is small but concerning, and it signifies an alarming failure of medical professionals to assess the products they are actively encouraging women to use. The doctors had no idea how modern hormonal methods fared in terms of breast cancer risk before this study conveyed tremendous disregard for women's health. Given that American women rely on oral contraceptives more than any other form of birth control, it is unbelievable that the medical community has not already completed a comprehensive risk assessment for modern contraceptives. As funding for birth control research and development declines, it feels as though women have few long-term options that sidestep the risks of hormonal methods. I'd like to see renewed research on new or better birth control products, ones that are safe and convenient, and incorporate men in pregnancy prevention. I think she said that well. And again, I think I wanted to read that to prove the point. This is not political. This is women raising the question, why are we just learning about this now?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think if men were the ones at risk of getting pregnant, I think they would have figured out some form of birth control that has way fewer side effects and is just a lot overall better. I will say that.
Yeah, and I think that she makes a very good point that more research needs to be done. That's something I personally think that both government and non-government officials need to be funding birth control studies. But when you think about it, millions and billions of dollars go into the birth control industry, and you never know who might not want these studies to be done.
Okay,
and we're the victims in the end.
Speaking of birth control, do you want to know kind of something funny? There's like been some funny drama over at the Federalist Instagram page. So like a month ago, we published this piece by a doctor who was a woman over at thefederalist.com, and the headline was "Stop Denying Science, Birth Control Isn't Necessary for Women's Health."
I remember reading that
one. And in her article, the main takeaway is like, she doesn't even say that birth control is bad. She's just saying a lot of times when doctors prescribe birth control to treat, because it is used to treat and try to combat some hormonal imbalances, she's saying that doesn't fix the underlying problem. It kind of masks a lot of the symptoms. So she's like, listen, if you want to get to the underlying problem, maybe, you know, think about alternatives, think about treating this differently. Doctors need to stop using this as a one-size-fits-all thing. That was her point. Angered a lot of people. People were just blowing, like, up our mentions, right? And since then, a lot of women on the a lot of commenters on the Federalist Instagram page will comment on just, like, random pictures. Like, okay, I don't know if you can see, but here's a picture of, like, Federalist writers wearing boots, and the caption is, "On Fridays we wear boots," with a cowboy emoji, right? Comment from, I don't even know how to say, Abich Toblerone. She says, "Birth control is necessary for people's health." On another photo, we have a picture of a book of an author who came on to, you know, be interviewed on the Federalist radio program. And the same lady is like, birth control is necessary for women's health.
I can only imagine what she would say to me.
I know. So anyway, I just thought that that was some funny drama that's going on. If you look at our mentions on Instagram, that's what's happening. That's the story behind this, because people are upset.
And I think, these types of studies, people on the left who are very pro everybody taking birth control find them very threatening, find this information very threatening. And I think that's exactly why Planned Parenthood, which claims to be the nation's most important educator for female reproductive health, has been completely silent and is not educating women on new studies that relate to their health. So I think for the woman who's commenting on your Instagram pages, and even some of the reporters who seem to be consciously choosing not to cover these studies, I think they do find them threatening to the liberal agenda, which is birth control for all, funded by taxpayers.
Yes, that is their ultimate goal. Speaking of ultimate goals and disappointments and sad things, in Alabama earlier this week, there was a surprising upset. Republican candidate Roy Moore was defeated by Democrat Doug Jones earlier this week. And since then, I have actually kind of enjoyed all of the drama surrounding Roy Moore refusing to step down and demanding recounts. I think all of this...
He's been a little sassy, hasn't he?
He has. Yeah, he's riding around on horses.
Named Sassy, if you don't get the
joke. Waving guns around at rallies. I've kind of enjoyed all of this. But anyway. An interesting phenomenon an interesting phenomenon among female voters happened in Alabama. 35% of white women voted for Democratic candidate Doug Jones, which is more than twice the 16% of white Alabama women who voted for President Obama in 2012, which is the last presidential race in which there was exit polling to compare those two. So this kind of raises the question, do Republicans need to worry about this voting bloc? Do they need to worry about actually doing things that women care about in order to keep them as a constituency? What do you think?
I would say yes and no. I would say yes, of course, Republicans need to constantly be on the lookout and be listening to women about what issues are important to them. And just to point out with us, it's not just the typical women's issues that are important to Republican women. Things like tax reform are very important to Republican women. But the reason I also say no is because I think this election was a complete outlier. I think if I were a woman in Alabama, I would have a very hard time getting myself to the polling booth because I don't want to support someone who, like Doug Jones, who supports abortion until basically the end of the pregnancy. And I also don't want to vote for someone who's been accused of
really bad things.
Really bad things that yeah. we don't even need to get into again. But you don't want to support something like that. And I think it's important for Republicans to know, don't ever run a candidate like that again.
Right.
But that's also to say that Republicans didn't necessarily choose Roy Moore. There's a whole big backstory there involving
Mitch McConnell.
And I think he deserves a lot of the blame for this. So, again, I would say there's not a huge lesson to be learned from this election other than don't run an accused child molester.
I think that is great advice. And speaking of advice, there was an article out earlier this week. Headline. Oh, it's from Everyday Feminism, which I check every day because that's what it tells me to do. It's called Everyday Feminism.
Glad you're in line.
Yeah. So the headline is 10 things every intersectional feminist should ask on a first date.
So,
I thought we could take turns reading some of these aloud back and forth.
Okay. Yeah, so this is advice from feminists on what intersectional feminists should be asking the men, or I guess women they're dating, on a first date. We found them hilarious and thought you might get some entertainment out of them, too. So number one, do you believe that Black Lives Matter?
Number two, what are your thoughts on gender and sexual orientation?
Number three, how do you work to dismantle sexism and misogyny in your life?
Number four, what are your thoughts on sex work?
Number five, are you a supporter of the BDS movement, which BDS stands for Boycott, Divest, Sanctions? And this is...
It's a pro-Palestinian organization that is really, really, really hostile towards Israel and the state of Israel and is oftentimes can... Some of BDS supporters can be anti-Semitic. I don't know why you're talking about this on a date.
I don't either. That seems...
On your first date... I don't understand. Anyway, okay, number six. What is your understanding of settler colonialism and indigenous rights?
I'm just imagining Bri on a first date asking this question.
I don't think I could do it with a straight face.
Do you think capitalism is exploitative?
Can any human being be illegal?
Okay, number nine, do you support Muslim Americans and non-Muslim people from Islamic countries?
Okay, what answer? No, I don't support Muslim Americans. Like, what? Like, no one is going to say that. That's so insane. Like, of course. Anyway, does your allyship include disabled folks? Okay, first of all, I hate that term ally and allyship. I think it's so, like, weird and kind of creepy sounding. Anyway,
well,
this
is
what feminists are saying. This is how you have a hot date, apparently.
Well, I'm gonna out our producer Lauren, who earlier today when reading this, the end of that section about disabled folks, it says on a date with somebody who uses ableist slurs, walk away. Well, it seems like from that terminology, walk away, they're actually not being inclusive of disabled folks who can't literally walk away.
It's true.
And that just shows how hard it is to actually live up to their standards and be inclusive in everything you say, do, and write.
This is fake woke. This is peak fake woke right here.
All I can say is you could create a reality show, a really hit reality dating show, showing women asking these questions to the men that they go out on dates with to screen them whether or not they are worthy and woke enough.
Yeah. Crazy. Absolute insanity.
All right. Well, Up next, we wanted to play this really heartwarming video from our good friend, Meghan McCain, who joined The View recently. She is killing it over there. Obviously, this is a very difficult time for her to be on national TV dealing with her father, Senator John McCain, who is fighting a very serious form of brain cancer. And Joe Biden, who has dealt with this type of cancer, went on the show to console Meghan McCain and to talk to her about this. And the video just was heartbreaking and inspiring in all the right ways. So let's play the clip.
The hard part. Bear with me, okay? I couldn't get through your book. I tried. Your son, Beau, had the same cancer that my father was diagnosed with 6 months ago. And I'm sorry.
But there's a lot of hope, babe.
I think about Beau almost every day. And I was told, that this doesn't get easier, but that you cultivate the tools to work with this and live with this. I know you and your family have been through tragedy that I couldn't conceive of.
Well, look,
what would you tell people? It's not about me, it's about everyone with cancer.
No, it is about everyone. But look, one of the things that gave Bo courage, my word, was John. Mm-hmm. Your dad, you may remember when you were a little kid, your dad took care of my Bo. Your dad, when he was a mill aide, worked with me, became friends with Bo. And Bo talked about your dad's courage, not about illness, but about his courage. And look, there's a lot of things happening. Any of you have somebody who is diagnosed with glioblastoma, which is about as bad as it gets, there's breakthroughs that are occurring now. There's four things that are going on. And it can happen tomorrow. Like, for example, at the University of Pennsylvania, where I teach now.
So that's a really sweet moment between Meghan McCain and Joe Biden that I have watched several times because I think it's just really sweet and touching and a reminder that, you know, regardless of what your opinions are on issues, at the end of the day, people are still people and we are all sinful and fallen and, you know, get sick. And this is something, finding a cure for this illness and fighting these diseases and supporting one another in times of tragedy and times of great grief is what makes us human and I think is the best aspect of being human, right? In the face of tragedy, that we can come together and comfort one another. And an excellent reminder to keep John McCain and the McCain family in our thoughts, in our prayers. I try to remember, I do pray for him every Sunday when I'm at Mass, actually. But a good reminder to try to pray, you know, more often for them because they are going through a very difficult time right now.
And I think part of the reason this video went viral is because it is so beautiful in the midst of such a toxic political environment to see people from very different political perspectives care so deeply about one another and genuinely be there for another in thoughts and prayers to lend their support. I think it's incredible. I think we are missing that in society. And I hope moving away from 2017, we can get to a better place where we have those more of those types of interactions with people who we politically might disagree with.
Absolutely.
Moving on to a lighter subject, that's so difficult to talk about. Our prayers go out to that whole family. We're going to play a fun edition of Real or Fake News where Bree is going to guess whether the college course names that I'm going to read are real college courses happening on a college campus near you or whether they are fake. So this came from the Young Americas Foundation, which put together this pretty incredible list of college course descriptions. And I think it just really goes to show what is happening on college campuses and what students are learning. So we have a bunch of them. We're going to go rapid fire and we're going to kick it off.
And if I get one right, the bell dings, which is my favorite part.
All right, number one, medieval sexuality from Northwestern University.
Real.
Rednecks, queers, and country music from the University of Michigan.
Real.
Hip-hop feminism at the University of Illinois.
Real.
The racist history of automobiles at the University of Michigan.
Fake.
How did you know that?
I'm just guessing.
All right, good job. I gotta give you a bell for that one.
Oh, I got all of them right?
Yeah, that was real. No, that was fake. That was our first fake one so far. Everything else has been real. Queering colonialism at Washington and Lee.
Real.
Queering the Bible at Swarthmore College.
No, fake. What? Queer in the Bible?
No, queering the Bible.
Like making the Bible queer.
Yes. This is a college course. Swarthmore College. Do not send your children there.
Oh, my God.
Queering the education system, Smith College.
Is this a verb? Like, what? Okay, real. Now that the other one.
That one's actually fake.
Oh, my gosh.
We made that one up because apparently queering colonialism and queering the Bible are real courses.
I'm just going to start using that a verb in situations that are, like, completely random. Like, have you done queering your lunch?
All right. Marriage in the Age of Trump, Davidson College.
Real. Why not? What? Oh, my gosh.
Gendered politics of food at the University of Georgia.
That sounds real.
That's real.
Yeah.
Gendered politics of food. How is that a real college course? I do not understand.
I don't know. I understand, like, the politics of food, but I don't understand gendered politics of food. Like, I don't understand what that means. Does it mean, like, rosé all day kind of thing? Like, I don't know.
So, because we're trying to get through this rapid fire, I'm not going to go into the whole course description. But for all those listening, if you are interested in learning more about these crazy college courses, you can go to the yaf.org website and you'll find a whole PDF that actually explains in detail what is going on in these college courses. A few more to get through and then we'll move on. Alternative genders at Texas A&M.
Real.
Vampires, evolution of a sexy monster. At the University of Kentucky.
I would actually take that. I hope it's real. I'm going to say real.
Maybe they'll invite you as a guest speaker.
Yeah.
Zombies, Modern Myths, Race, and Capitalism, DePaul University.
This actually sounds interesting because zombies were associated with slaves. And I'm not joking, in the West Indies, like actually slavery was so brutal in the West Indies that they would work slaves to the point of death, and then even like sometimes they would come up out of the graves, and like it was really horrific conditions. So that actually does sound like an interesting course that could be beneficial. I'm gonna say real.
The future of feminism, is it inclusive enough? UC Berkeley.
Real. What?
We made that one up because
so believable.
It's such an important question that of course college campuses are not asking it.
Oh my gosh.
All right, contemporary knitting, gender, craft, and community service, DePaul University.
I'm going to say true.
Body burdens, toxic tales and politics of environmental racism, Harvard University.
I don't know what that means, so I'm going to say real.
Last one, fat, the F word, and the public body, Princeton University.
Real.
You did good.
I did pretty good. I think I only got
well.
One.
Well,
oh, right.
I'm going to crack myself before anyone watching on Facebook Live does. All right. Well, moving on to perhaps our favorite segment, Problematic Women of the Week. This is where we crown the woman who has been the most problematic by the liberal left feminist standards. So drum roll, Brie, who is it?
This week, our problematic woman of the week is Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's the White House press secretary. Earlier this week, she was asked by CNN political contributor if she has experienced sexual harassment. I was appalled that someone would ask someone this on live TV.
And not just a CNN political contributor, although I think it makes it worse. He's a man, and he's also the Playboy White House correspondent, which is apparently a real thing. I believe we have a clip of this. We do not have the clip of this. But you know, all the press conferences are streamed live. We stream them often from the Daily Signal. And so this was basically on live TV where a man asked the female White House press secretary if she's ever experienced sexual harassment. I mean, Imagine if she had experienced sexual harassment or actually had been raped or assaulted, and she's standing on stage and a man has the audacity to bring this up. It's funny because the left is always concerned about these trigger and trigger warnings. Well, that's an actual situation where she could have been triggered if she had experienced that. And we still don't know if she experienced that because in her response, she didn't answer the question because it was so inappropriate.
Yeah, she doesn't, she shouldn't have. I mean, this is ridiculous. And this is something that happens actually kind of a lot. One of my coworkers, Mary Catherine Hamm, who was at Fox News until like a year ago, I think, and she made the jump over to CNN. At Fox News, she would frequently appear on Bill O'Reilly's show. And after all the allegations that came out against Bill O'Reilly, people actually asked her if she had experienced any sort of, you know, problems or inappropriate behavior from Bill O'Reilly. And she came out and was like, this is ridiculous in 2017 that anyone is even asking me this. This is very personal and none of your business. And the fact that people just feel like they're entitled to know this about you or even like assume that that happened to you is so out of line and so unreasonable and ridiculous. And I definitely applaud her for, you know, coming out and speaking out against that.
Yeah, and part of the problem with this question is that it was phrased in the way that they're talking about the allegations against Trump, which resurfaced this week, the
right.
sexual harassment allegations against Trump. And the question was asked in the way that Sarah Huckabee Sanders can't possibly empathize with any woman who has experienced sexual harassment or assault unless she has experienced it herself.
Right.
That is such a problematic way of thinking to begin with. And then when you add to it that she's on national TV, and then just to think about the double standard of this, can you imagine, you know, one of Obama's press secretaries being asked that? I don't think any reporter would dare ask somebody who worked for Obama that. How about somebody who worked for Clinton? Maybe there'd actually be grounds to ask somebody who worked for Clinton because of the hard evidence that came out about Clinton, even though I'd argue it's still not appropriate to ask any woman that, even in the Clinton administration. But we just never saw these types of questions being asked in the past. And somehow this male reporter gets a free pass by the press to ask this question to Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
No, it's completely ridiculous. And the context of that question, he was almost kind of implying that if she hadn't been sexually assaulted or harassed, then she should feel bad about that and like stay quiet about this whole topic, when it's like, no, like what? It's just so bizarre on so many levels. Yeah. And I hope, I don't know, I hope he felt bad about it afterwards or something, or, you know,
said sorry. I know he appeared on CNN afterwards. I don't know if he apologized, but any men, if you're watching this right now,
don't
because
ask.
We're talking about these conversations
yeah.
a lot with the Me Too, don't ask a woman that. It's not appropriate. If she wants to
it's
tell
none
you,
of your business.
She will tell you.
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. And, you know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders has to put up with a lot. This morning or last night, she was making pies. Did you see this?
Yes, this is so amazing. Way to end the show.
Yeah, she was making pies because she made a pie for Thanksgiving, and April and Ryan tweeted at her, yo, show us that pie on a table, because she didn't believe her that she actually made the pie. So Sarah Huckabee Sanders was making pies last night and was live tweeting the process and tweeting at April Ryan, which I thought was super funny.
Some super great trolling.
Yeah. Keep it up. Keep the trolling. Keep up the smoky eye. Stay tough. And
we got your back, Sarah. We got
yeah.
your back.
You know, and we're not the only ones who have her back. Her father also thinks very highly of her and has said some very sweet things about her in the past. And we're going to end the show on playing a little clip of that.
Now, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I feel sorry for you. I've started a hashtag support for Sarah and get your mind out of the gutter. I seriously support you in your quest for truth, in your quest for goodness, in your quest for love of country, because you haven't made it there yet.
Quite a lecture.
Yeah, and again, I mean, just consider the source. I'll probably have to take half a baby aspirin tonight just to be able to get to sleep because Mika Brzezinski attacked my daughter, who is one heck of a strong lady, a great mom, a lovely wife, and a terrific public servant. And she deserves better from other women. And it just amazes me that even the women who say they're feminist are doing everything they can to discredit my daughter. But, you know, to her credit, my daughter stands strong and tough and walks in that lion's den of a press room every day, and I believe represents women, represents the president, and represents strength in an incredible way. And I'm just extremely proud of her. And, you know, Mika can go pound sand somewhere as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Amen, Mike Huckabee. Amen. That wraps up our show for this week. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And as always, if you know a problematic woman, please let us know. You can follow my work at The Daily Signal and on Twitter at Kelsey J. Harkness.
You can follow me on Twitter at Brie underscore Payton. And you can read all of my work over at TheFederalist.com.
This podcast is a collaboration of The Daily Signal and The Federalist, and it is produced by Lauren Evans of The Daily Signal. You can tweet segment ideas to her at Lauren Liz Evans. All of the Heritage Foundation's podcasts are now featured on Ricochet Audio Network Podcast.
Whoop whoop.
So if you like this, you can check out our others over there. We appreciate you sharing Problematic Women with all your friends, and of course, for your support of strong conservative women who are standing up for America's culture.